What is going on in Israel right now? That is something that is on all of our minds. And in just a moment, I'm going to be back with Jonathan Feldstein, one of our Charisma podcasters who lives in Israel. And he's going to give us the inside scoop of what's happening with these high holy days that are upon us, as well as the elections and UN resolutions that are happening. We'll be right back after this short message. Read more stories on spirit-led living when you subscribe to Charisma Magazine. Go to mycharismashop.com and enter in the promo code CPN to receive 10% off the price of a subscription. This is John Matarazzo for Charisma News, and I'm here with Jonathan Feldstein, one of our podcasters on the Charisma Podcast Network, but he lives in Jerusalem, or just outside of Jerusalem, but he's in Israel. And he is going to give us insight on what's actually happening in the Holy Land. Jonathan, welcome to the Charisma News Podcast.
Hey, John. It's always good to be with you and great to have an opportunity to visit today.
So we have the holy days that are coming, the holidays that are coming up. I mean, when we've talked off mic, you told me that there's only like 4 or 5, maybe 8 working days this month. Everything else is either it's related to the holidays. And so first off, how are you getting in your preparation for these holy days, and which holy days are these for the people that that aren't aware?
Excellent question. So first of all, this week is Rosh Hashanah, the new year. You'll forgive me that I don't have the biblical references to tell you and the listeners where God said this is the first day of the ninth month and we're supposed to observe it so and so. But yeah, it's the new year and it's festive and it's something that we do as family with lots of prayer and joyous meals together. And the beginning, if we haven't already been doing this, kind of, I refer to this period as the World Series without a main season. We've just kind of gone from spring training directly into the World Series, because this is the beginning of the 10 days of repentance. We're really supposed to be deeply introspective and taking account of everything that we might have done wrong, fallen short, certainly any actual sins in the previous year and people we have harmed and righting our relationship with God. So we have a month preparation which just ended, and now we're back, now we're in the playoffs or in the World Series. And Rosh Hashanah begins. It's festive, it's lovely. Thank God most of my family is together for this, and we're very, very, and we are blessed, and we also use this time to take account for our blessings. But we spend a whole lot of time in synagogue and prayers. I mean, dozens of hours, and there's a lot of just a lot of great fellowship together along with the prayer. We also have a lot of fasting, because if we jump in, it's not just Rosh Hashanah jumping into Yom Kippur, which is next week. The Day of Atonement, where we're fasting instead of feasting. And we have another fast day snuck in the middle as well. We're really taking account of our responsibilities and trying to begin the new year on a much better foot, beseeching God. It's not just the metaphor, it's the actual belief that God opens the book of life and inscribes us all, or doesn't. And on Yom Kippur, he seals it. So we've got now this 10 days. And it was a great question when you asked at the outset, how am I doing? How do you prepare? I have to tell you, one of the challenges, because of the limited work schedule, eight days in the next 4 weeks that I actually have ability to do a full day of work. And by the way, I don't mind not doing a full day of work, but there's a lot to do. So the last few weeks have been harried, rushing to get everything done, knowing that this was coming. And for me personally, and I regret it, but I'm honest about it, it's limited my ability to kind of get in the season, get in the mood and set up myself. Lots of people here in Israel have been doing what's called slichot prayers, penitence prayers for much of the past month. And that's kind of like an alarm clock, where we can hit the snooze button a couple of times, but now we have to wake up. Now we're in.
Right. So this next year, In the Hebrew year, it is 5783.
Right.
I've heard people explaining there's some significance about those numbers, and the numbers connect to different letters. From your perspective, could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Well, first of all, anyone listening might be scratching their head saying 5783 what? Because we're in 2022. It's 5,783 years since creation. Right, we're very biblical people. We follow it, and so that's the anniversary. It's the anniversary of the birth of the world, and that's pretty extraordinary. Sorry, what was this?
I've heard people explain that there's significance about the specific numbers of the year. Like each year has a different theme. What could you just talk about that?
Right. So the Hebrew letters. Every Hebrew letter has a numerical correspondence. Aleph is the first letter. It's the number one. Bet is the second letter. It's the number two, and so on. And every letter has a numerical correspondence. So the year 5783 also have a numerical correspondence. And there's a Hebrew word called gematria, where people add up or look at the numbers, the numerical value of what they all mean, and will correspond them to something else, or we'll take the letters that are associated with the numbers and we'll then say, oh, it's a year. Actually, this is a fascinating year. If you take the Hebrew letters, some people have said that it's going to be the year of redemption, because the number three also represents the Hebrew letter Gimel, which is the first letter in the Hebrew word Geulah, which is redemption. So, of course, we're praying for that. How amazing. Yeah. And whether it's this year or not, it's a great wake-up call to get ready. But there's a lot of that. People will correspond numbers and say that the numerical value of this year also equals, I don't know, furniture, which means you also have to, this is the year to get new furniture. I'm not like that. I just kind of roll with it. But there are significance with the numbers and the letters.
Okay, that's something that I'm always interested in because, you know, it seems that every new year, my birthday's at the new year on January 2nd. So every new year, I feel like God gives me a new focus for this next year, or a new vision, or just a tweaking some things in my life. And I was just, you know, we're heading into that. And, you know, a lot of people here in the United States, especially, like to make New Year's resolutions. And that's where gym memberships go way up. And then within a month or two, they're way down. I was just wondering, since you're heading into that, if that kind of correlates there as well.
Well, my birthday is also the end of the year, December 31st. So we're both Capricorns. I always found it was a lousy day to be born, except for my parents. They got a little tax deduction that year. But I always felt that my birthday was overshadowed by New Year's, and you're right. But New Year's is somewhat decadent. New Year's, people make resolutions. And if you think about it, most resolutions are for yourself. Right. And what's so cool now, which I love, I mean, if it's only this period of time now, I am all in it, because I have to, even if I'm imperfect, and boy, I'm the most imperfect person I know, or at least one of them. But even if it's, even if I stand before God with all of my imperfections, I have to stand before God knowing that I'm going in front of him with all sincerity to try and make this a better year. He knows my heart better than I know my heart. So he's going to be the judge of that. But it's very, very different from the Gregorian secular New Year.
Well, that definitely helps us understand, because you know, those are things that in our American culture, we just kind of say, oh, their year starts at a different date, but they must do the same things. No, it's a little bit different. And there's it come to more of a repentance time, which
correct.
I think that's definitely something that we need to do. And I know there's a lot of churches and people that do that. I want to shift a little bit, and I want to talk about some things that are happening in the political and the governmental world. We have things that are happening in the UN with different resolutions and security issues, but also the election is a big thing. I mean, Israel is going back to the polls for, how many times now in the last couple years?
So the beginning of next month, not next month, the beginning of November, November 1st, is our fifth election in 3.5 years. And some people would have the right to look at it, Israel, and say, "Woof, it's kind of like a banana republic. At least we have elections and not revolutions." But it's been very bad for the country, this inconsistency. The government that is currently the caretaker government under Prime Minister Lapid has actually, in that 3.5 year period, served the longest. And so that's given us a little bit of stability. But what's happened now is that basically we have more parties running. There are a total of 40 political parties that have registered. Most of them won't even begin to get a significant number of votes. You have to have 3.25% of the total vote in order to get into the parliament. It's called the Knesset.
Oh, wow.
And if you then get that 3.25%, then you're there. But most of the parties, probably a dozen, maybe 15, will get into the Knesset. Having said that, there's a tremendous competition now as all of the respective parties and all of the leaders of the respective parties are now trying to carve away their constituency, and sadly, in most cases, taking away from the other politicians rather than building up and say, this is why we're good. This is why you should vote for us. And a lot of the political message here is don't vote for X, don't vote for Y. And there are two main camps. It's for now, multiple elections have become about former Prime Minister Netanyahu, who most people know and remember. He was our longest serving prime minister ever. But he's been out of office now for close to 1.5 years as he lost the last election. He wasn't able to put together a governing coalition. So there's very much like in America, the country's very evenly split, not pro-Netanyahu or anti-Netanyahu, but in the camp that is likely to support a government under Netanyahu as the head of the Likud party, and in the camp of several parties that won't form a government, that specifically will not serve in a government with him. And either of those could happen, because right now the polls are saying that it's almost evenly split. Just last week was the first poll that said he might eke out a very slim majority in order to be able to establish a coalition on his own.
Now, could you briefly explain what a coalition is? Because I've done a bit of following for Israeli politics for a couple years now, especially with the different political seasons happening so quickly with these re-elections I forget exactly what they're called, but you know, I've had to educate myself about this. So I'm going to try to explain, but then you can kind of correct me. So there's a lot of different parties, and you still like, there's not enough of no party by themselves is strong enough to actually become the leader of the country.
Correct.
So you actually have to form a group of parties to kind of say, we're going to stick together and we're going to work together to make this government happen the way that it's, so that we can actually have some sort of an actual government process and government coalition where they're working together. And then if you can't come up with that, and it, like the person that's been elected can't, or the party that's been elected can't actually bring that together and keep them together, and then you lose the 51% with everybody all together, then you then go back into another election cycle. Did I explain that correctly?
Very, very good. Here. Very close. But let me just jump back a moment. Our Knesset has 120 seats. Like any democracy, you need a majority, at least 51%. We've never in 75 years had one political party that received at least 51% of the votes to say, we are now in charge. So what that means is typically it's the head of the party that gets the most votes, but it's not always that way. After the election, it's the responsibility of the president, who is head of state, not head of government, to converse with all of the parties and say, okay, who do you recommend to be the next prime minister? And based on their recommendations, the president will appoint one person or another person to form the government. And that doesn't mean that the person does. That just means that the horse trading starts and they have to start the negotiations. And the interesting thing about the current government, just as an illustration, is it's the widest government we've ever had, from some very right-wing nationalist parties to very left-wing parties. And the first Arab-Israeli party with four seats that ever in the history of the state agreed to be part of the government. So all of those people and parties have to come together and agree on a parliamentary plan, on a governmental plan, and try to find a way over and above that not to disagree. And even within the one of the reasons that the current government fell apart is that there was disunity within the individual parties. So you started seeing people peel off, and therefore the government coalition, the majority, became a minority, and the government could no longer last. So look, the best world would be, the best scenario would be for us to vote and elect one party and have that party, the head of that party, become prime minister and appoint all of the cabinet. But that hasn't happened yet, and it's certainly not happening this current election.
Yeah. So whenever somebody goes to the polls, or whenever you're going to go cast your vote, is it true that you just vote for a party? You don't vote for an individual.
Correct. And it's charming because we actually put a slip of paper in an envelope. Each party is represented by, we were talking about numbers and letters before, anywhere from one to three different letters on a piece of paper. It's sort of like a code. You have to know what code your party is. And then you put that slip of paper in an envelope and then put that envelope in another envelope. So the when ballots are counted, we're talking about actually counting ballots. And we only vote for the party. And it's the party that has most of those little white slips of paper that typically is the one in control to have the first shot at establishing a government.
So in November is whenever Israel goes back to the polls. What do you think is going to happen? Do you think that they will be able to form a coalition this time?
I think that there's going to be an element of a surprise vote that's not reflected in the current polls. I get text message surveys that people are asking my opinion on stuff. I don't know who they are. I don't have the time or interest. And frankly, I'm undecided. And the more and more I speak to friends, a lot of us are undecided. And for the first time in our lives, we don't know who to vote for. I think that that is not represented, which may mean that there will be a smaller percent of people who go to the polls or vote for what we call a protest vote, because we're tired of the logjam and want change. I would love to be wrong, and over a month is still a very long time. A lot can happen here to change the polls. We don't have early voting. We don't even have absentee ballots. You have to physically be here on the ground to vote in your district on that day. And I think a lot can change, and we'll maybe have a conversation in another week or two.
Yeah.
And certainly afterward if you want. But I think if elections were happening tomorrow, we would be seeing a sixth election off in the springtime after two or maybe three people failed at forming a government.
Wow. So it's Israel needs a lot of prayer when it comes to it just picking its leader.
We do. There's one. Let me just add one more thing. There's one other potential variable. For good and for bad, Prime Minister Netanyahu, former Prime Minister Netanyahu, is one of the best politicians that we have. And he's been working very hard, not just to make sure that he and the Likud party get lots of votes, but the logical parties that will form a government with him will also get support. And that's played out in a number of ways. Some people think that by building up some very extreme right-wing parties, that he's actually going to end up coming to the centrist parties after the election and say something to the effect of, please save me from myself. Let's form a governing coalition with the Likud party and two, three, four, maybe five other parties that will bring together 70 or even 80 seats. And that would be a strong government. It's an interesting strategy, but I don't know if that will actually happen because some of the people in those other parties really dislike Netanyahu.
Sure. So I know things that people are concerned about here, because we're about to head into our midterm elections here. The economy is a big deal. The abortion, the overturning of Roe v. Wade is another issue on the ballot. Immigration, I mean, it's not actually on the ballot, but people are representing it, and it's a strong thing that people are campaigning on. And then dealing with our southern border and illegal immigration, those are things that are issues that people actually, they become dinner table issues.
Correct.
What are some of the issues that are a key thing that is people are talking about in Israel? What are the things that people care about most?
Well, typically, the top three issues when an Israeli goes to the polls are security, and security. Mm-hmm. And our security, because almost all of our children serve in the army, not all in combat like my son did, but it's personal. We've served, our children serve, at this stage our grandchildren are going to be serving, and the threats, whether they be on our immediate borders with our neighbors in Gaza, the terrorists who control Gaza, or the Palestinian Authority, or in Lebanon, Syria for sure. There's been some heating up of issues in Syria. These are all immediate concern for us. The big one, because it's an existential threat, is the Iranian aspiration to acquire a nuclear weapon, and they refer to Israel as a one bomb country. So all of this stuff, and also I should add, I mean, those are much more global. Those will get news attention. But as the new year, as the old year ended and the new year began, like in America, we do a lot of recapping. What was in the previous year? How many Israelis are there? How many were born? How many died? How many moved to Israel? Legal immigration, which we celebrate, and all of those issues. Also, we counted 19 casualties from terror, 19 people who lost their lives in the last year from terror. And all of that adds up. But over and that governs everybody, John. But over and above that, the economy is a big issue. In America, I know gas prices have gone down a little bit, but we're still spending on average of over $8 a gallon. The price is high. It's always been high. It's always been higher than there. And it's gone up appropriately. Food prices have gone up. Real estate has gone up. The economy, it's a kind of a global thing. Education is very important. It always is. The relations domestically between the different sectors of the community, the different sectors of the Jewish community, the ultra-Orthodox, the nationalist, modern Orthodox like myself, and the secular, as well as our Israeli Arab neighbors. These are all important. But, you know, I kind of hope that one day, I'm praying for peace, but that we can have the luxury to be able to look into those more on the ground civil issues that are your dinner table conversations, because our dinner table conversations are still who's going to stand up against the people who want to destroy us.
Yeah. And speaking of who's going to stand up against the people that want to destroy us, I mean, there's some recent things that had happened in the UN, where it seems that basically from my understanding and my interpretation, it seems that the UN, other than back in 1948, whenever they said, yes, Israel needs to be its own nation, they've been against Israel pretty much ever since in backhanded ways. And that is my own political commentary about that, but that's kind of what it seems like. So just what happened recently in the UN that, because you brought up that you wanted to say something about that.
Sure. So it was the United Nations General Assembly. Maybe it's still going on now. I'm not following. But just in the last week, there were a couple of things that happened that were kind of significant and relevant. And I'll start with probably the least significant, although it's still very significant. And I don't know why it happened. The king of Jordan, Abdullah, came to New York, and in his remarks in front of the whole United Nations General Assembly, among the things he said was talking about the threat of Christians to Christians and Christianity in Jerusalem, which is nonsense. Even Christian leaders here said that it's nonsense. And I don't know why he felt the need to go that way. I don't know why that happened, but it was also strange because he said it the day before he was scheduled to meet with the Prime Minister of Israel. And that's sort of not a way to go in a warm, positive relationship. No. That's kind of a big question mark. He may have to be playing to his own street, but he didn't even need to go that way. There are a lot of other things he could have done. Afterward, we have the Iranian president, Ibrahim Raisi. He's a bad guy. I mean, just on all levels, he's just a bad guy. He's a terrorist in his own country. It's alleged that he's involved for the murder of anywhere from 5,000 to 30,000 Iranians.
Oh, wow.
And he's one of the leaders threatening Israel's existence. And he stood up. You know, it's amazing to me that you can have a world leader allowed to come, forget to the United Nations, but even given a visa to come to the United States, to arrive at the United Nations, to speak such hate, to stand in front of a body that's supposed to be about peace, about getting along, when he's actually standing up there threatening the existence of another state. Then it was interesting that it was followed by Prime Minister Lapid, who spoke articulately, very personally. He spoke about his daughter who has special needs, and how last May he had to wake her up in the middle of the night to take her to their bomb shelter in his private home because his community was under threat of rocket attacks. And he spoke about his father, who was a Holocaust survivor, his grandfather, who was murdered in the Holocaust. And he extended an olive branch to the Palestinian Arabs by talking about the need for a Palestinian state, which some will argue with or not. But that's not the point I wanted to make. His even putting that out there was rebuffed by the president of the Palestinian Authority, who lives 30 minutes, 40 minutes from where I live if there's no traffic. And yeah, they're just, the Palestinian Authority is still rejecting Israel, not accepting the right to exist, still inspiring and celebrating the terror attacks. And it's really unheard of. I love that the Prime Minister stood there and said, I'm not here speaking to you as a guest. I'm here speaking to you as an equal, because he needed to put that in the face of everybody who's coddling the Palestinian Authority, who's coddling Iran, and all of which are threatening us.
Wow. I come to you as an equal. That is something that needs to be really put out there publicly. Like, people need to think that, just because people need to understand that everybody there is an equal. And if you're representing your country, you're not there as a guest. You are an equal.
Right. And not asking for special privileges.
Exactly. It's such a simple thing, but it's something that's often just neglected or forgotten about.
Indeed.
Wow. Wow. So, Jonathan, I appreciate just you being able to share what's happening in Israel and just kind of the political environment, just the social environment, what's happening spiritually as you're getting ready for the new year and everybody's in this season of repentance and getting ready to go into the new year. What is one thing that we can be praying for you and for Israel about?
Wow. Can I give you a one thing like our security?
Sure.
Look, we always need to pray first for the security of Israel. And first and foremost, everybody is created in the image of God. And we don't wish ill on any of our neighbors. So I pray that God will change their hearts. He can do that. If that doesn't happen, or if it doesn't happen right now, then I pray that we will overcome our enemies. And I ask you to join us in prayer for that. And then the other second piece I would just add is that we get a significant outcome, that I'm wrong, that the election will be decisive and allow us to get a good degree of governing stability without the bickering that's unfortunately been part of our society here. The elections are the fifth in 3.5 years, but we've been in a political season of bickering for 4.5 or so years. We need that to end.
Yeah. Well, we can definitely keep those things in prayer. And I would just want to encourage the Charisma News podcast audience to keep Jonathan and Israel in prayer, especially with the things that he just laid out there. And I want to encourage everybody to also check out the Inspiration from Zion podcast with Jonathan Feldstein on the Charisma Podcast Network. He's got great interviews, and his perspective on things from Israel is very unique and very insightful, and will help us understand more of what's happening from a biblical sense, especially from the Jewish roots of our faith. Because he is a modern day Orthodox, or a modern Orthodox Jew. Yeah. And we just appreciate your understanding and your wisdom that you share with us. And we look forward to having you back, Jonathan, on the Charisma News podcast in the next week or so. So
always a blessing, John. Thank you for the opportunity to share.
This has been John Matarazzo for the Charisma News podcast. God bless you.